Hey there, and welcome to In Layman's Term, the podcast about Belmont athletics and all things Nashville sports. I'm Steve Layman, News Channel 5 sports anchor and the play-by-play voice of Belmont Bruins basketball. Coming up on today's show, we visit with Nashville Sports Council President and CEO Scott Ramsey. We're getting excited for the Music City Bowl at the end of the month. Iowa and Kentucky have a feeling it's going to be low scored. Quarterbacks are out, defenses are great, but the weather's looking good. Should be a fun day to wrap up 2022 over at Nissan Stadium. We'll talk to Scott about how that matchup came about and the dominoes that took place in bowl selections this season. We'll also talk about Scott's responsibilities with the Nashville Sports Council and how the new Titan Stadium, if it goes through, how that will impact future events here in Nashville, such as maybe the college football playoff or even a Super Bowl. And finally, we'll get into his dealings with Belmont Athletics and Athletic Director Scott Corley in particular, as we talk about how Belmont has fallen into the Nashville landscape in terms of sports, helping lure big events to town, and the respect Belmont Athletics has around the community and beyond. We have an exciting list of guests lined up all throughout the winter here on the podcast. We hope you'll sign up and like it, and we hope you keep tuning in as well. But for now, we get to our conversation with Nashville Sports Council President and CEO, Scott Ramsey. Well, Scott Ramsey, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year. Hope you're well.
Merry Christmas, Steve. Good to see you.
And you're not busy at all this time of year, are you?
Yeah, it's certainly one of our real crunch times. You talk a lot about the bowl and you know, the annual work schedule and calendar, but you really work 11 months to kind of get prepared for a three-week kind of rush once you know your teams to really infuse that planning and then tailor it to each school. From hotels to team meeting rooms to food and beverage, transportation, practice sites, game day, bowl week, all those kind of moving parts that really kind of, you know, come into play here, you know, between December 5th and December 26th this year when they arrive in Nashville.
At this point, how much of the hay is in the barn, so to speak? You talk about working for 11 months to get prepared, but you really don't know exactly what you have until you announce the teams. But then you've got Christmas in there and all that. And I know you and your staff want to be with your family to some degree. So how much work is done at this point? How much is still left to go?
Well, you try to frame up as much as you can generically, Steve, and then you're going to have to flip it to specific. Let's just talk signage. You know, I mean, you kind of put an SEC Big Ten logo as placeholders and you flip it to Kentucky, Iowa. So you've got to kind of get all that stuff ready. Certainly the planning with the teams coming, they bring their ops team, football ops, the president's party, their athletic department, communications all to town for a few days. That all happened last week to really kind of walk through. You know, they're bringing a big party to town and to schedule all that, everything from alumni events to team movements, kind of schedule that out. So we typically kind of lose a week there because the teams are in. And now we're flushing through all their questions and details. So it's a pretty fast and furious 2 or 3 weeks before they get to town. And then once they're to town, I mean, typically we've been pretty well on schedule. Certainly some outside events we've had with Battle of the Bands for the past, you know, past 2 or 3 years, we've had some weather issues. But other than that, I think, you know, the schedule pretty well holds true. It's just laying in the details.
Scott, I fancy myself a little bit as an amateur bracketologist and bowl projectionist. And for the bowl games, ever since the New Year's Six in the playoff, it seems like it's really become pretty easy to slot most teams because it's very formulaic at this point. The SEC was not that way this year. There's a lot going on. Can you talk through it all, the process between those teams in the kind of top tier SEC bowls, including the Music City, and the role Notre Dame played in to kind of throw a wrench into the whole conversation?
Wow. I know we don't really have a time limit like we would on your normal show, Steve. So I'm going to try to kind of walk through it this one. But, you know, it's not as you know, as cut and dried sometimes as people think. There's a lot of levers, a lot of dominoes that happen. So kind of walking through it, I mean, day one on, well, Sunday selection day kind of unfolds with three or four, you know, parts to the puzzle. First of all, obviously the top 25 rankings. And I say the top 25, and obviously then within the top 25, you've got various elements. You've got the top four. After the top four this year, you've got the contractual bowls, the Rose, the Sugar, the Orange, that then take either the champion or a replacement team from the conference. The other side of the Rose Bowl, then you had to place either SEC or Big Ten, the highest ranked team after the contractual obligations in the Rose and the Sugar. And then you get down to the next highest rated guy was going to play Tulane in the Cotton Bowl. So in some years, you're really kind of trying to guess on who's ranked 9th to 12th, and which is really difficult because where that impacts us is once those New Year's Six are kind of placed, then the Big Ten, SEC, and the other conferences with their bowl partners start moving through their process. Well, you've got to know which teams are going to be available at that point to kind of be able to do some either ors on some things. So we talk about the Big Ten this year, and that one, it's a pretty odd connection when the USC-Utah game was really a determining factor, and here's why. Had USC won, and let's say they stay in the top four, then the Rose Bowl had a selection because they lost both the Big Ten and the Pac-12 champion to the top four, so they were going to select. And it felt like behind the scenes they were probably going to select Penn State because they'd had Ohio State last year. It could have been a rematch with Utah and so forth, so on. So at that point, the trickle-down could have put Ohio State staying ahead of Tennessee in the ranking into the orange. If the Big Ten is in the orange, then Tampa, the old Outback Bowl, now LieQuest, foregoes a Big Ten selection and selects ACC, which was going to take Notre Dame. In that case, we slid up to pick second right behind the Citrus, and we were going to select Illinois if they were available just because of the uniqueness of their year. They had a great year, 8-4, so forth, so on, and we hadn't had them before. So that domino then reversed once Ohio State moved up in the top four and Penn State went to the Rose and Tennessee to the Orange. So those kind of things are direct impacts on the process. On the SEC side, you're trying to really kind of think about, okay, who's going to be in the pool of six of us? And this year you had Mississippi State, Kentucky, South Carolina, Ole Miss, and then you had a couple 6-6 teams, Florida and Arkansas and Missouri. And so you're trying to really mix and match, knowing that the conference really is trying to avoid a team coming back to the same city within a three-year window if possible. You're trying to, the conference is trying to think about how can we best serve the bowls collectively rather than individually. So it's not a direct pick. So it's a really complicated political and moving kind of target all the way up to the very end of Sunday afternoon when we kind of get it done.
You explained that very well. I took some notes, though I'm not sure I'm going to be able to pass the exam later. I am curious about the Big Ten piece of it, though, because I'm a graduate of the University of Illinois, and I know a lot of people there were very excited about the possibility. Mm-hmm. It's just over 5 hours right down from Champaign. It would have been their first trip here. They're also excited about going to Tampa now. But instead, you get Iowa, who's a first-time participant. Right. In the Music City Bowl. Talk a little bit about how you got to the Hawkeyes and the excitement of having that first time team from the Midwest coming down.
Yeah, I think, Steve, the other thing that you wish you could kind of have time to really explain to the general fan is sometimes we don't look as much as the football game as we look at sometimes the event scope. And I say that in regards to Iowa a little bit. We really knew this year, if you look at Nashville as a city, we've got a Titans-Cowboys game that was announced, you know, what, in early May, whenever the NFL schedule came out, that immediately sold out. Last time Cowboys were here was, I can't remember when, several years ago. You had that on Thursday night, the 29th. So that adjusted our game date. We typically like to be on the 30th because our New Year's Eve party on the 31st allows the Bowl fans to come in, stay if you want, if not, leave, and the hotels can kind of turn it over. So we got moved to the 31st, so we have at least a chance on Friday to turn the field. It's still a natural grass, and trying to paint it and hang banners and clean it up and be ready for the game. So when we knew we had that kind of tight window, and you knew most of the hotels were going to be full on Thursday, most of the hotels were full on Saturday, you kind of wanted to really, if we could, kind of get some regional teams that gave some flexibility, because you knew the hotel inventory is going to be very difficult for a farther away team that was going to have to book airline tickets, hotels, and the whole thing, a la Penn State or a Minnesota or somebody like that was probably going to fly in. So we kind of really were kind of targeting, if possible, could we get a couple regional teams? Certainly Illinois, Iowa, Kentucky, Ole Miss, some of those teams that we really felt like had some regionality to it, which we felt like gave the fans the best chance to come to Nashville and hopefully fill up the stadium the best we can and fill up our city the best we can, given that we had two bookend events that were pretty massive in our city. So each year is a little bit different from that standpoint on your game date and some of the kind of the other goals you have, whether it's some teams that hadn't been here before, some certain unique matchups, and you just try to do the best you can after you see some wins and losses of some teams that could be available to you.
The SEC has been a longtime partner, and obviously that makes so much sense. And so many of the fans within the Southeastern footprint have made their way to Nashville for some other reason along the course of their lives besides just football. It seems to me, though, like there's a real presence of Midwestern people coming down to Nashville these days, maybe in ways that they didn't 10 years ago or 15 years ago. How much has the Big Ten partnership elevated and changed what the bowl is when you have so many people from a different region now coming and being really excited about the trip?
I think that was a huge step forward for us 3 years ago when we went exclusively with the Big Ten for this six-year contract cycle. We're in year three of those 6 years. But to your point, Steve, I think Nashville now has really turned into, you know, one of the most popular destinations for the Midwest. And we heard that from the athletic directors. I mean, one of the great compliments I think we got, not just as a bowl game and how we've kind of hosted the teams and hosted the fans, but when their athletic directors voted on their bowl lineup 3 years ago for the next six-year contract cycle, which we're in, they put Nashville in there right there with the two Florida games in Orlando and Tampa, and moved away from two games which are traditionally the preferred spots on the beaches in Jacksonville and San Diego. So to think that Nashville kind of was a destination that was desired by the athletic directors and administration, I think it was really a great confidence booster for us and something we should be pretty proud of. But I think it also echoes your point that I think the Midwest destination desirability of Nashville has really increased over the years. And we're excited about hosting them. I think to your point of Illinois, I mean, teams like Illinois, look how many people Purdue brought last year, how many people they brought when they played Auburn. So I think the accessibility to our city is continuing to be a huge plus for us.
It's the 25th anniversary game of the Transperfect Music City Bowl. So maybe it's fitting to have Kentucky, a team that's been around a lot, and so you get that local flavor in the game as well.
Yeah, it's a great relationship we've got with Mitch Barnhart and the entire Kentucky administration. Certainly, you know, hosting the basketball tournament now annually here is first and foremost. But, I think it just kind of worked out this year. Again, to my point earlier about trying to find a fan base that could kind of navigate maybe the tight hotel situation we had this year with Cowboys and New Year's Eve kind of on the front and back end. Kentucky just seemed to be the best fit, and coming off the win with Louisville. Honestly, Steve, it was kind of an odd year where the majority of the teams in our pool weren't coming in with a lot of momentum versus some years where you've got three or four teams that are really hot at the end, coming in at winning eight games or nine games. They've kind of, you know, turned their season around. And we saw that with Tennessee last year. And we saw that with Purdue last year. And this year, kind of honestly, you felt like a lot of teams were kind of struggling at the end that were available. And unbeknownst to anybody, you've got massive brands like Auburn and A&M that weren't even bowl eligible. So it was every year's different, but I think the relationship with Kentucky their affinity of their fans for Nashville was a positive, and we feel like a Big Blue Nation will show up and create a great game day environment for the game.
You're going to be able to stream basketball on the Jumbotrons during the game.
Yeah.
There's a pretty big basketball game going on in the Commonwealth.
I wish you could line up the perfect scenario every year. And in 25 years, we've certainly done that more times than not. This year, there were a couple of unique things. I mean, Iowa, Kentucky, it's the only second time they've ever played in the history of the two schools, two of the most loyal fan bases, in the two conferences. But the other time they played was January 1, 2022 in the Citrus Bowl. So two bowl games back to back and two times in their history that they played. And it's a Kentucky Louisville game, which from the Kentucky fan base side, and I'm sure there's some Louisville people listening, but not maybe their best year this year from a competitive situation. So maybe the football team will kind of take a little precedent on the 31st this year.
Well, it should be a real defensive slugfest. Looking forward to that, because these two teams are defensive-minded for sure and really good. You mentioned historically the time frame, and you've moved to the 30th in most years, and you really like that. It seems like the profile of the game has definitely increased, even in just the last 4 to 5 years. You moved to that 31st time slot this year, as you kind of alluded to, out of necessity because of the Titans game, but you end up as the lead-in to the football playoff. You think you're going to like that in the end? And could this be more of a permanent home for the Music City Bowl?
Well, I don't know if it'll be permanent. I think we're still going to look at kind of year by year here. And really, I think, Steve, we're going to look at probably a three-year window. And then once you see the impact of the 12-team playoff starting in 24, probably reassess of kind of where that's going to go. So not sure, but you're right. I mean, to think, that we're on ABC for the first time ever, network television, and we're only one of four games on that day, two of which are the semifinals, the other one being the Sugar Bowl. It is a pretty pretty high class to kind of put our game in and a platform to be in on a national scale. So, I think all those signs, Steve, really are great foundational elements for where we're going to go as postseason college football goes. I think Nashville's positioned itself to take advantage of whatever opportunity is going to be out there. I don't know what those are yet. Certainly, we've got a new playoff model coming. We've got hopefully a new stadium coming. We've got a lot of opportunities for not just the bowl, but some national championship kind of level events. And I think nationally, people really are responding well to our city and our opportunities that hopefully will be ahead of us.
So where do you think that goes, Scott? You've got the playoff down the pike here in the next few years, going to 12 teams. That seems almost definite. Where do you think a bowl like the Music City Bowl then falls and what postseason college football is going to look like 10 years from now?
It's a great question. I think the last two or three years, Steve, has really, really put in some elements that you've really got to kind of, get maybe a little more data on. One, player opt-outs, pretty significant. Fan interest, I think, is something you want to try to gauge. I think we have a city that is maybe a little more, recession-proof, if you will, for fan travel than other cities. But still, it's going to be an impact. We'll see that a little bit of that impact this year. And then lastly, I think really it's kind of where we can insert and compete for what we think is the best place for Nashville. Are we going to chase the national championship game? Absolutely, with the new stadium. Absolutely, we're going to chase that. But where else can we fit? What's the bowl structure and bowl model look like outside the 12? And no one has that answer yet, but that's certainly the next 12 months, I would say 12 to 18 months for 26 and beyond is going to be on the table for all the meetings with the conference leadership, the athletic directors, and then ultimately our city. Hey, where do we want to kind of go with this thing? And until that structure is kind of framed up a little bit, it's kind of a hard question to answer, because I'm just not sure you can make an independent decision of it. I need the SEC. I need the Big Ten. I need ESPN. And I need the fans to kind of like where we are to come to our city, or the model doesn't work. So you're going to have to kind of measure all those things collectively.
Scott, I'm not even sure if you can totally answer this, but given the backdrop, big picture, 25 years ago, I'm sure you couldn't even imagine where the Music City Bowl would stand or what the college football postseason would look like today. And now here we are, and we're projecting out for what it's going to look like at year 30 or year 35. Yeah. As you think about that, the bowl has obviously been incredibly important to the growth of Nashville as a sports city and as a destination city around the new year. But we could be heading into a totally new era of postseason college football. How important is it moving forward that the Music City Bowl legacy be preserved and part of the calendar versus if we get a 12-team playoff and you could be a frequent host of the national championship game or, depending on the format, a almost yearly host of a quarterfinal game or a semifinal game or whatever it might look like? How do you weigh the importance of those two things?
A lot of questions in one there, Steve. Give you some things in my head. First of all, where we started and where we are now is inconceivable, really. I remember us being pretty hesitant in even starting the game because at the time we were absorbing two of the big four professional leagues at the time, NFL and NHL. In the late 90s, a new arena, a new stadium, an NFL team, an NHL team, and new suites to sell. And what are club level? Nobody knew what they were. So, you know, there were a lot of things kind of going on. And could we kind of underwrite, manage, and sustain a bowl game during the slowest week of tourism during the year and really create any kind of energy and people wanting to come to Nashville? Because at that time, you know, it was pretty much Florida, Texas, Arizona, or California for the bowl game. So it was a challenging business model. And to think that we've generated almost $400 million in spending, we averaged 5 million viewers, we've crossed 1.2 million in attendance, and now we're positioned as one of the real elite destinations in postseason opportunities going forward. I don't say that lightly, in that I'm not sure I would be want to be in any other city right now as you look 5 to 10 years out for what's ahead of us with a new stadium. So that's a pretty incredible kind of journey. I think what it looks like in 5 years, Steve, is really difficult to kind of forecast right now. Like I said, until there's a real structure to react to, and a structure that we are going to have to react to and not be proactive in developing, is one that's really going to dictate where we think we can compete. There could be one model where they're going to extend the new year six guys out, and hey, you can't buy something that's not for sale in this quarters and semis. So what do we want to do with our game? When do we want to play it? How does it fit in with the conferences? How are the conference going to invest in it? Which broadcast want to invest in it? And then separately, we've been on the national championship game, and then start thinking about a sequential series of events like Super Bowls and championship games and Final Fours and those kind of things. How do we sustain and elevate the bowl where it is in the national landscape? So there's a lot of things there that we're working on as an organization and trying to stay ahead of, and just be prepared to kind of react to as a city once some of that structure is outlined.
The bowl, I think of the SEC tournament. Now you've got some more recent events added to the calendar, like the NASCAR race or the Music City Grand Prix. How much do those yearly events that are on the calendar that aren't necessarily the Super Bowl or something that you'd have to bid for that you get once, that's obviously a boon, but the yearly events that fit on the sports calendar, how key is that to your mission and what this city's all about?
Well, as I think through kind of right now with SEC basketball, we've got locked in through 35. Ironman now owns the St. Jude Rock and Roll Marathon Half Marathon, which will be our 22nd year, I believe, this year in late April. Like you mentioned, the new IndyCar event will be entering year three, and then our bowl game in year 25. And then I think when you say lay those out as kind of your anchors, you're always looking then to kind of how you can kind of recruit events that kind of fit in. Last year, we had the U.S. Figure Skating Olympic Trials. We've got SEC Football Media Days coming next summer. We've got Tennessee-Virginia opening game on Labor Day weekend next year. So I think right now you start really looking at a 5 to 8 year kind of window of schedule, and also kind of lay in some of the major citywide events that we currently have. You're not going to bid on an event in the second week of June here with CMA Fest going on. So I think we do a really good job collectively as a city of saying, hey, here's some targets that we have, opportunities we have, where can we go kind of chase these things? So, I think that's kind of where we are. And that's a real credit to the cooperation of the mayor's office, the state of Tennessee, all the infrastructure support you need from police, fire, public works, but also the Preds, the Titans, now new MLS stadium. What can we look at for that facility, and where does that fit into the overall grand scheme of things? And we really work together really well thinking about that. But to your point, those annual events kind of help kind of populate and able to work around. You know, years ago when SEC basketball, for example, you just felt like you were in perpetual bid mode. We host it in 06. Well, we were bidding on it for 10 and 11. You didn't know which one. So you didn't know, could you bid on the NCAA first and second rounds that year or not bid on it because it overlapped and we couldn't do two weekends in a row and put the Preds on the road. So there were a lot of kind of moving parts. Now we can kind of build around more of a permanent kind of schedule. And it's really been much more advantageous for us.
As I sit and think about the evolution of Nashville as a sports hosting city, there's really three huge events that stand out to me that kind of changed the perception. The first one to me was the NHL All-Star Game in 16. It seemed like that was taking an event that was on the calendar every year that the NHL walked away and said, that was the best one we've ever had because of the things they did around it, the concerts, the party in the park, the actual All-Star format changed and I think made it more competitive. All of that was that piece. The second one was the Stanley Cup run. And just the buzzes around the city and then the parties in the street and the park that I don't think anybody in the NHL had ever seen anything like that before as well. And then the third one was the NFL draft, obviously, in April of 2019, which raised the bar for all NFL events in terms of the spectacle around the event itself. Am I missing anything in terms of what really elevated Nashville, and how much did those three events with the kind of the two main sports in our city's calendar elevate the profile that has made Nashville its city to set the bar for these things?
No, I would say those three certainly turned the corner for us. And I would say though, it's hard to discount the 15 years before that, of the events that we continue to do at a high level, women's Final Four, SEC basketball, NCAA tournament, and certainly the NHL All-Star Game. You're right. We recreated a game and a skills event to an event, right? And made Nashville really unique in that setting. Same as what we did, I think, for the Stadium Series event, you know, last year in doing that. But I think laying the groundwork over the years where our reputation as a host site and somebody that would do events well, that would make it a great experience for everybody involved, from players to fans, really kind of helped us land those events. And then we performed. So, you know, again, I think we're positioned as well as any city in the country. The new stadium will open up some of the largest events in the United States and in the case of Super Bowl, the world. When you talk about national championship football games, Super Bowl, men's Final Four, WrestleMania, events that are probably the biggest scope from a sporting standpoint that we could possibly do, now that we can kind of put Nashville in that opportunity list is a little inconceivable from where we were 25 years ago, to be honest with you.
It's remarkable, and you and your staff and the city deserve a ton of credit for where this has all gone. Nashville is a great place in terms of the logistics and the culture, in terms of being a fit for all this, but you guys have certainly worked hard and there's a lot of partnerships that have helped you raise the bar to this level. One more question on facilities and the big events before I move on to one last topic here, Scott, and that would be, you've alluded to the stadium multiple times here. On our previous episode, we had Jim Nance on, and he made a little bit of a prediction that he thinks there's a shot, if all goes well and the stadium opens in 2026, as is targeted, that the sweet spot for a Super Bowl in Nashville would be 2028. And he's secretly hoping that's the case because it would be on CBS and he'd get a home game. So I'm not going to ask you for a prediction on when it would come, but what's the process like when you're talking Super Bowl, the national championship game, a Final Four, WrestleMania, all of those sort of things? Obviously, ongoing discussions with the city now to get this thing through. But once they decide, okay, shovel goes in the ground here, here's the date that the stadium's going to open, how do you begin the bid process? How long do you have to wait? How early do you have to start? And when could we conceivably, 2028 or sooner or later, see one of these events?
Well, I think a couple reactions to that question. One, I think, again, credit to our collective city in that we've never really cared about who got the credit for getting an event here. And to that point, we've done a really good job of strategically planning through many mayoral administrations, but we huddle up as a city, public and private, hospitality industry. You need the convention center, you need the arena, you need the stadium, you need everybody on the same page for whatever event it is, NHL All-Star Game to NFL Draft, now to Super Bowl and championship games. And so right now we're in that process. I think you wanted to make sure everything got through council. You get it done, get it finalized, get a better timeline for construction, and then really start thinking about sequentially laying those events out, Steve, because one of the things I've heard from my peers in other cities is you can get some city fatigue. I mean, it sounds great as a sports fan that, hey, we got the championship game, the Super Bowl, and the Final Four, and back to back to back to back. Well, it just takes a lot of resources, both money, but also just kind of infrastructure. You need the entire convention center for 14 days. You need this. You need cleanup. You need police. You need security plans. You're going to close roads. You're going to have impact. So at some point, I think we're trying to attack it very strategically and be smart about how do we kind of line those events up? How do we pursue those events? Who's going to take the lead in those, bring it back, and make sure that we're successful in hosting them so we host them again? Because we don't want to be a one and done. And you can be a one and done pretty quickly for an event of that scale if you just don't host it well operationally or externally to the public side. So we're ahead of it. We're going to be ready. We're going to be locked and loaded. And we're already kind of starting that process, to be honest with you, Steve, behind the scenes.
A couple questions about Belmont and its involvement in the city. One, Scott Corley, athletics director, has been heavily involved with the Nashville Sports Council over the years. How have you seen sort of his evolution within the city and athletics administration and his role in helping Nashville elevate as a sports city? And then the school itself, I know, partnered with you for the Davis Cup a few years back, and what Belmont's been able to add to the puzzle.
Well, again, Steve, I think, and you mentioned the Davis Cup, but you know, Scott's done a great job. And being an athletic director in today's world, whether he'll say it or not, I'll say it for him, it's really tough. I mean, managing NIL and transfer portals and escalating coaching salaries and people moving around, it's really hard to kind of put together a whole program and be very consistent. And Scott's really been a steady hand at Belmont. And I know with a presidential transition, sometimes that changes things, and it just hasn't seemed to happen. And that's a lot of credit to Scott. Certainly transitioned from a legendary coach like Rick Byrd, and just kind of maintaining the stature of where Belmont is, moving conferences. So, you know, behind the scenes, if you put all the things that would challenge an athletic director, it seems like Scott's kind of had to navigate all of those, from conferences to presidential to climate changes to NIL. And, you know, A is my neighbor, so I got to say something good about him. But he's been a great piece of our community, to be honest with you, Steve, and a lot of credit to him and Belmont. And, you know, from our standpoint, we've been talking, you know, here today about big events. I think the events that that we can pursue because of the variety of facilities that we have, from Belmont to Lipscomb to the arena to now MLS Stadium to hopefully a new Titan Stadium to to those kind of venues are tremendous and really give us as a city a pretty broad stroke of events that we can go pursue. And sometimes you need those secondary facilities for practice facilities, which we do during SEC basketball, for some other unique events like we did for the Davis Cup. So great partner, and appreciate all he's done for the city and for not only Sports Council, but for Belmont.
All right, final three questions. I ask this to everybody who comes on the program because they're a little bit unique, but they kind of tell us a little bit more about who you are and how you got to this point. The first one is, if you weren't president and CEO of the Nashville Sports Council and the bowl game, which you've done so well for so long, what would you be doing?
Oh, man. I'm not really sure. I grew up, I played on golf scholarship in college, so I probably would have tried to pursue some sort of event management side in the golf industry in some form or fashion. But that would be my best guess, considering I'm just trying to day by day have them not kick me out of Nashville with all the great things we've got coming. So that's been my focus the last 25 years.
Well, you've done a great job. There's no question. And so I don't think anybody's running to move you out anytime soon, Scott. The second question would be, what inspires you? What's the thing that drives you to wake up every day and continue to do this and strive to be the best for yourself, for your organization, for the community?
I have thought about that on occasion, Steve, and I would say, the opportunity when I came here in 1995, in that we didn't have an arena, we didn't have a stadium, downtown wasn't quite what it is now. And to have people talk about the great experience they've had coming to Nashville for the events that we've been able to work on, our staff, our volunteers, our partnerships, our teams, probably keeps me going because that's a really inside. That's a really feel good. Has every event been perfect? No. Have we missed? Yes. Is every event a sellout? No. But people leave here that they were treated well. They had a great experience and they've wanted to come back. Kind of keeps me going for the next iteration of what Nashville's going to be.
The last one is, when you have one of those days where you accomplish something, and you knock it out of the park and you want to celebrate when all the work is over and you sit back with your family or friends or whatever, say you land the Super Bowl or the Super Bowl goes off without a hitch, whatever it may be, how do you celebrate that? We've had some interesting answers. We've had everything from watching Netflix at home, just chilling, to going to the gym and working out and letting off some steam, to gorging ourselves at restaurants around town. What is Scott Ramsey's way to let it all loose and just celebrate after a big win?
You know, it would probably be very low key, Steve, probably at home with the family, maybe finding a really nice bottle of bourbon somewhere and celebrating with the family. But, it's little victories that are as exciting as maybe the big victory. We've had, a great share of those, but it's probably going to be a pretty low key for me. I'm not a real glitz and glamour guy.
That's fair. I love a little sip of bourbon after
something. There you go. As well.
What would be your go-to?
I'm a Weller fan, to be honest with you.
Okay. So. Yeah. I don't think any bourbon drinker is going to disagree with that.
There's a lot of good ones out there, but that's probably the one that I could, if I could do not every day, but anytime I wanted it, would probably be my go-to.
Well, cheers to that. Scott, thanks so much for the time. Congratulations on all of what you and the Nashville Sports Council in this city has been able to do. Merry Christmas. Enjoy the bowl game. I know you guys are going to knock it out of the park again. We'll talk to you soon.
Well, Merry Christmas to you, Steve, as well. Thanks for having me. Enjoyed the conversation. We'll see you around.